Hi, everybody. This is Tristan. You know, this isn't the usual jovial opening we start off with for a Nerds Talk Movies episode, but we had a quick addendum to add. This episode that you're about to listen to, our retrospective or spoiler talk, whatever you want to call it, on Superman Batman Apocalypse, was actually recorded a couple days before the news of Kevin Conroy's passing. That is
R.I.P.
Yeah, R.I.P. That is why we don't mention it in this episode. But we wanted to take the time to record a little something just to, you know, put that out there, just to honor him and his memory for a lot of us, myself included. And Drew, we talk about this in the episode, so I feel comfortable speaking for you in this regard. He is the voice that we hear when we talk or when we read Batman. He is the character for a lot of people, so him not being around is very very tragic loss for, you know, his family, his friends, his loved ones, and honestly just the world. So thank you, Kevin, for everything you did for me personally. You were my first Batman, and I don't necessarily know that my life would have gone the way it had you not just immediately made me obsessed with the character and comics as a whole. So thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah, don't know how to follow up because it really feels like we lost a legend, and he really was like the Batman. It's like, if you look at his IMDb, you can see he was Batman for video games, he was Batman for cartoons, he was Batman sometimes just for voiceovers. It's like,
he was even Batman in live action for, you know, Crisis on Infinite Earth, technically.
Yeah, he was truly our Dark Knight, and we mourn his passing, and it's really hard to think that we have lost him, but at the same time, we do want to honor him. We don't just want to let you guys go into this episode thinking, hey, you guys didn't mention it. We just recorded the episode before it happened, but we do still want to give our thanks to him for our childhood memories. For me personally, he was also my first Batman the Animated Series. The reruns came on literally everywhere, so it's like I could enjoy those classic Batman tales. And then just to hear him continue, sometimes I would even forget, like, oh, that's not Batman's voice, that's Kevin Conroy's voice, who's just doing Batman. It's that deep for me, but I do want to say thank you. You made a lot of amazing childhood memories, and you helped me cultivate a lot of friendships just by being amazing. So thank you. Rest in peace, our Dark Knight.
Rest in peace. And we can speak for everyone at the Nerd Stash when we give our condolences to his family and friends and loved ones, and really anyone listening who's ever been a Batman fan. This is a loss we're all going to be feeling for a while. So thank you, Kevin. And yeah, I'm sorry to see you go. Hello. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Nerds Talk Movies. I am your host, Tristan Benz, because Taylor is, he's out. He's out today. He was out last week, and he's out this week. You know, he's a man on a mission, and he's not going to be back until that mission has been completed. What that mission is, I can't say. I'm not at liberty to discuss.
It's classified.
It's classified.
Shield priority.
If we told you, we'd have to kill you. So instead, when Taylor's away, the boys will play. You know what I'm saying? Because with me today is, as always, my good friend, Drew. Drew, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I am excited for this one. I really want to do more DC animated movies, and this is actually my special pick, which would have actually been different if Taylor was here.
What would you have picked if Taylor was here?
All-Star Superman.
Oh, man, what a fucking picture that is. Mm-hmm. But you know what? This is also a fucking picture. So
it is.
I can't necessarily complain. Now, as for what this picture in question is, y'all saw the title, you clicked on the episode, like, you know what it is. We're talking about Superman Batman Apocalypse, the fantastic DC animated film from 2010. Here's a brief synopsis provided, as always, by the hit or miss IMDb. We'll see if this synopsis is more or less accurate than what the film actually is. So, Batman discovers a mysterious teenage girl with superhuman powers and a connection to Superman. When the girl comes to the attention of Darkseid, the evil overlord of Apocalypse, events take a decidedly dangerous turn. I'd say it's pretty spot on. That's pretty spot on.
A few things missing, but
that's, you know, watch the movie and find out, I guess. So here's some of the main voice cast for the film, along with the director and a few writing credits, just because, you know, with all these comic book properties, you gotta give credit to the creators. So this was directed 100%. By Lauren Montgomery. And for the writing credits, at least as provided by IMDb, it doesn't seem like they talk about who actually wrote the movie itself. It's really just crediting
Tab Murphy
creators.
Tab Murphy.
Well, shout out to old Murphy there. Shout out to Murph. But, you know, we got to give credit to the creators. So Batman created by Bob Kane, Bill Finger, Superman created by Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster. Wonder Woman is created by William Moulton Marston and some other artist whose name I can't remember, and now I'm part of the problem. I'll have to Google this, you know, next time we're talking about anything with Wonder Woman in it, because there is someone else who was, it's a similar situation to the Bill Finger thing, where, like, he just never really got credit, even though he was a big part of it. I think there's something like that with Wonder Woman.
I think it's H.G. Peter, if I remember.
That sounds about right. Yeah, that sounds. Hang on. I knew it was someone with like two Google. Letters in front of their name. You Google that. I'll keep going with the rest of the credits. Obviously, all the Fourth World stuff with Darkseid and the New Gods, created by Jack Kirby, the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Yeah, and then we got Otto Bender and Al Pacino creating Supergirl, Kara Zor-El, fantastic. And this whole film is there it does say written by. See, why'd they put written by this person all the way down underneath all these other credits? That's confusing. You know,
yeah, you should put that at the top.
You should put it at the top. It's poorly organized.
Yeah. Oh, and H.G. Peter is the artist.
Okay, there you go. Shout out to H.G. Peter. And this whole film is based on the storyline, the Supergirl from Krypton, from the Immaculate Superman Batman series from the early aughts by Jeff Loeb. This story arc was drawn, I should say, by Michael Turner. And you see that art style imitated. In the art style of this film. But just quick aside, that's one of my favorite comic series of all time. Like, it was one of the first I started collecting trades for when I was young, single digits, first getting into comics. So, you know, everyone go read Superman Batman. It's great stuff. It informed my understanding about Superman and Batman, and it was part of why I was so excited for Batman v Superman to come out.
Yeah. I wish I had money back then, because I would have totally been collecting this one too.
Yeah, I think I've got, at least have the first six of, like, the thick trades that they started putting out in recent years, so that actually may be the whole series. I'm not 100% sure. As for the voice cast of this film, again, the way they order this voice cast, it's bananas. So, you got Tim Daly from Superman the Animated Series fame as Superman. You got Kevin Conroy from Batman the Animated Series fame as Batman. I mean, come on. Just two of the best. And they are joined by Susan Eisenberg as Wonder Woman, their peer, their equal in iconic voices for the Trinity. Some of the other big voices got Andre Brower from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you know, Captain Holt himself as Darkseid. You got Summer Glau as Kara Zor-El, Supergirl. I mean, come on. Summer Glau, like, she's great. Her as Supergirl, fantastic.
She's honestly my favorite voice for Supergirl, period.
She's a damn good Supergirl voice. I'm still partial to, I can never remember her name. Who voices her in the DC animated universe? That's still my preferred Supergirl, but, you know, Summer Glau is, you can't go wrong with her. I can tell you that damn much for sure. You got Julianne Grossman as Big Barda. You got Ed Asner, RIP, is Granny Goodness. Like, come on. Classic Ed Asner performance. Like, he also a lot of pullover from the DC animated universe in this cast. And that's probably because it was voice directed by Andrea Romano, who voices Stampa and Vicky Vale in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's other people, the you know, the Amazons are in it, the female Furies are in it. I'm not reading all this cast. This is ridiculous. Tara Strong is in here, that's a name you'd know. You know, otherwise, it's other people. Shout out to them.
Honestly, is there anything animated that Tara Strong isn't in?
That's a great question. That's a great question. Not that I can think of right now. And you know what? Good for her. She's in her fucking bag. So, this movie comes from DC straight to DVD collection, and it's... Let me see. From what I understand, is the first movie the
this is actually what
sequel? Wait, is this the first one that was a sequel? I feel like we got another. Well,
nope, no, this I guess. This was the first one.
Yeah, this was the first direct sequel. Because wasn't Emerald Knights just an anthology, not necessarily like set in the same as First Flight?
Yeah, it is a sequel, but it came out later.
Well, that is how sequels work. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, it came out after this one. Emerald Knights came out in 2011. This one came out in 2010.
Gotcha. Well, there you go. So let's get in. See, here's the interesting question. Normally in this show, we'll do the comic connections with Tristan and Drew. Today, it's just Tristan and Drew. And with this film you've picked, Drew, I would say more so than most of the things we've done, this is pretty much the most direct, like, one-to-one adaptation.
Yeah.
So I feel like us doing the comic connections is unnecessary.
Agreed.
Like, really, if you've watched this, for the most part, you've read the comic, aside from, like, slight differences in the way it gets resolved in the final fight. But otherwise, yeah. Like, this is a pretty, for the first hour and what? No, because this movie's, what, 78 minutes long? Hour 18?
Yes.
So for the first... say 55 minutes, it's pretty one-to-one. It's not until that last like 20 minute section where you're like, they changed some things around a bit, arguably for the better. Who's to say? I'm sure that's a conversation we'll have.
So I think it's just arguably for like public consumption, because yeah. It's like, then you have to explain, well, what is that wall that Superman put Darkseid
in? I don't think the general layman's gonna get the Swords Wall. And also, like, at the end, they probably didn't want to animate all those, like, you know, superheroes that are there to see Kara's debut. It's easier to just do a bunch of generic Amazons, like, you know, and again, no judgment, like, you know, whatever, do what you do, save money. So Drew, let's start with you. You picked this movie. Just what are your general thoughts on Superman Batman Apocalypse?
This is one of my favorite DC animated movies, and that's hard because they pull out bangers. It's like, bangers. Yeah, I don't really think I can think of a bad movie that they've ever pulled out. Marvel, take notes.
Batman killing joke.
Okay, yes.
Just from the parts that I've seen, I refuse to watch all of it, but the parts I've seen, like,
Okay, look, for anyone, just a quick segue, for anyone who wants to watch Batman the Killing Joke, skip the first third, and then you have a perfect adaptation. It's like, you're not going to get the same visuals, but it's still a perfect adaptation of it from there. Just do not watch that first third, and it's a good movie. It's just that first third really ruins everything.
I mean, hot take, Killing Joke, I think, is a little bit overrated, but...
Yeah, it is.
That's just me.
It is. I really like it just because it was the start of Oracle, and that's my favorite Barbara Gordon as Oracle.
That's true.
Yeah, but back to this movie, Superman Batman Apocalypse. Really do love it. I was just getting through... It's like, I think this was like the second one I watched, because I had watched Wonder Woman when it first came out, because I didn't know these existed, because DC doesn't really push these a lot, which is weird. You think they have some commercials for these. So I didn't know these existed, but then it's like, this was the second one I watched, and which is ironic, because I watched it backwards with Superman Apocalypse, and then Superman Public Enemies. But yeah, I like it. It's a really straightforward story. It shows Supergirl, and was also one of the things that made me super interested in her story. Because the DC anime universe, while I liked it, during the time, there were some shenanigans with Supergirl in the comics that made it hard for you to, like, get into her story.
Well, like, hey, it's Supergirl and Angel? Who's to say? Maybe she's, like, from another dimension. I don't know. Is she a pink protoplasm? I couldn't tell you. Maybe she's Superman and Lois's daughter from the future. You know, Supergirl.
Okay, I actually like that one.
I love Sorrel. I'm not talking shit about Sorrel. I'd love for them to bring her back. I was kind of hoping that's what they do with Supergirl in the Flash movie, but it seems like it's going to be Kara Zor-El, which is also great, because Kara's a great character. I'm not complaining. It's just, you know, shout out to Sorrel. I'd love for her to make an appearance again.
Agreed. This is also one of my favorite dark sides. Like, I understand that there are some problems that people have with how he's voiced, which ironically is not with his voice. Oh, I'll get into it later. But the whole thing is, like, I love this movie. And again, this is one of the movies that was like my introduction into the DC animated movie universe, which really deserves more love and more praise.
It does. It does. I mean, they burned a lot of goodwill with their whole like little connected universe they tried to do, like with the New 52. And, you know, some of those were less good than previous DC animated movies, we'll say. But, you know, I also big fan of the DC animated movies. I still have a lot of them on DVD in the other room. Like, there's some good adaptations. And, you know, now you got me hankering to rewatch, you know, All-Star Superman. But yeah, no, it's, I think this is probably one of the most straight-up adaptations, like one-to-one adaptations that we've talked about so far in the show, and, you know, that works out really well for me, because I'm also a big fan of the storyline in the comics. Like I said, Superman Batman was probably my favorite series. It was definitely one of my first series getting into comics when I was in the single digits, and, you know, a lot of Jeff Loeb's writing doesn't necessarily hold up these days, and also things have come to light about him just being kind of an asshole that is like, that kind of tarnishes the reputation. But I will say that I do think for the most part, Superman Batman holds up, and this is just a shining example of both this movie and the comic, shining example of what, you know, Superman and Batman can be when they're working together and not trying to murder each other for 2.5 hours and then one of them dies. I say that as someone who loves that movie, but, you know, I wanted them to team up, but
there's a reason why World's Finest was released as a movie as well as episodes in the DC animated universe.
And that actually, that World's Finest movie, that is what got me into comics in the first place. Watching that when I was like 3 or 4, I was like, oh shit, I'm in. So, you know, it works, folks. Superman and Batman works. Don't let anyone tell you different. So let's get into the meat of the show, Drew, because we got some things to talk about here. So just right off the jump, you know, you said that you wanted to touch on Andre Brower's voice. And this first topic I want to talk about our favorite characters and really the voice cast as a whole. So why don't you kick us off talking about these problems that some nerds have with Andre Brower's Darkseid, which I think is fantastic.
So apparently, some nerds wanted to say that Andre Brower's performance was lacking any presence with Darkseid. And I've got to ask, did we watch the same movie?
Did they watch it on mute or something? Like, what's the issue?
I get that this is coming off the coattails of Ironside and his Darkseid voice, which is fucking iconic. I mean,
that's goated. Like, come on.
That's goated. But it's like, at the same time, it's like, there are two different voices. He's not going to be Ironside. So him giving Darkseid this calm yet scary voice was honestly amazing. And it makes you realize that he rarely feels out of control.
Yeah.
Darkseid has a presence that is truly...
He's calculating.
Yeah. It's like, it's just so good that I don't understand why some people say like it lacked presence. It's like his whole thing is like, my presence is there. Your life is in danger so long as I am there, and even when I'm not. So, I don't get it. Really, really, like, had me scratching my head, but hey, if you don't like it, that's fine. I'll enjoy it.
I mean, yeah, there you go. I mean, the only... It's not even really a note. The only thing that I could think that they could do with his voice is maybe... And it's nothing to do with Andre Brower's performance, like, and he already has a perfectly deep voice, but if they maybe wanted to add some type of effect to make it sound, like, slightly more otherworldly. But, like, this is still, like, a performance, you know? Like, he has a presence in this film. He is cold, he is calculating until the moment, you know, he snaps and is like, all right, you've pushed me too far. Like, you're not... This is not going to plan. I guess I'm just going to have to stomp your ass, which he does to great effect. But no, Drew, 100%, I am right there with you. Andre Brower is a terrific Darkseid. But who are some other standouts from the cast for you? I know Summer Glau is one, as you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Summer Glau is my favorite Supergirl voice to this day. And you can really tell, like, she was enjoying her time in the role when she was doing it, because Supergirl, she's able to have such range to where she can be scared, even if you don't understand what language she's speaking. Kryptonese, I think, is what it originally called, but I don't know what it's called currently in the comics.
I think it's still called Kryptonese.
Yeah. I like the fact that there are moments where her personality can shift when she feels like she's in control, when she feels like she's out of control. She, you know, she's still a teenager. She hasn't had, like, been in a fight yet, so she's, like, scared, and you feel that in the way, like, her voice screams and the way, like, she's losing control of her powers, and it's all portrayed through the voice. You could literally just hear her, and you could understand everything that's going on with Kara. Like, her emotions are truly on her sleeve, and she's not trying to hide anything, but she's also, like, got moments of badass confidence that is also pulled off in this movie. And some of it you wait for in the last moment where she finally has her moment to prove herself, and it feels so earned and justified. Like, that final battle with her.
Yeah, that's one of the best. I'd go so far as to say that's one of the best, like, superhero fights we've seen in an adaptation, period. Like, animated or live action. Just the choreography alone is top-notch.
And she did something I never thought you could actually do in comic books. She turned the Omega Beams against Darkseid, and she did it cleverly. Like, using Darkseid's feeling of I'm always in control against him was... I love it. I love it.
It's a good moment that differentiates her between Superman. And it also, like, that's almost something that, like, you know, Wonder Woman or even Batman would do. Like, it is a good character moment of, like, oh, she's not exactly like Clark. She has learned from these other people, even, and she's learned from Darkseid himself, like, even just in this short time that she's been active, you know, using her superpowers. Like, she's definitely learned from more than just, you know, Ma and Pa Kent saying, you know, be a good person and treat people with respect. It's like, this is a slightly, you know, cunning and underhanded move she's got there, which is awesome and is great to use against Darkseid, but it's like, oh, she's, you know, she's not afraid to fight dirty.
Mm-hmm.
And going off what you're saying about Summer Glau's performance, I 100% agree. She is definitely a standout. It's, you know, it's funny that we're, you know, you say, oh, wow, like, you can just really, like, get the character just through the voice. Because, you know, these are voice actors and is the point of the role. But, like, to that point, I think it is, like, especially Summer Glau and I think Andre Barr, but really the cast as a whole, because so many of these are, you know, these are mainstays in these roles. Their performances are such that, like, even without the animation, if you were listening to this as, like, an audiobook or something, you know, or a radio play, like, you would still feel like the majority of the story. Obviously, the visuals are a huge part of this. It is a visual medium, but you would still be able to feel like the emotion and the range and the character arcs and all that, even if you were just only listening to what was happening and you couldn't actually see it.
Yeah, I totally agree. All the voice cast does a really good job with the inflections in their characters.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, at a certain point, it's hard for them not to. You know, because this is especially like Tim Daly, Kevin Conroy, Susan Eisenberg. Now they've all been playing these characters for, I mean, Susan Eisenberg about 20 years, Kevin Conroy, Tim Daly about 30 years. But even at this point, like, this movie came out 2010. By then, Kevin and Tim were still, they'd had 20 years about in these roles. Maybe Tim Daly more like 15 years, because in Superman the Animated Series start, what, 96, 97, something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Susan Eisenberg since, what, 2002? But either way, these are characters that they know incredibly well. And that's the one, I guess, not necessarily, it's not a nitpick, but I guess the one thing that makes it difficult to say, oh, who are, you know, your favorite characters? Because at a certain point, especially with those three, and I'll also say with Ed Asner as Granny Goodness, because he's so iconic in their role, when you start asking about, you know, favorite performances and favorite characters, it's really just, at that point, you're just getting into an argument about, or a discussion about who are just your favorite characters, like, as these comic book characters, because these are, for a lot of people, and myself included, depending on the story I'm reading, honestly, these are the voices that are synonymous with these characters. Like, for millions of people, you know, at the very least, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, these are the voices they hear for Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, and, you know, Granny Goodness. So it's almost like, well, you know, Kevin Conroy was a real standout. Well, it's like, yeah, he's Kevin Conroy. Like, he's Batman. you know? Like, it's Susan Eisenberg is Wonder Woman. I will say, you know, I know I just said it's hard to pick a standout. I do think that Tim Daly got a little bit more to do in this role than he has in a lot of the other DC animated movies that he's done. He's still, like, obviously he was Superman to Superman the animated series, so clearly, like, he got a lot of chance for range there. But, you know, Superman is, along with Supergirl, like, the real emotional focal point of this story. So I think Tim Daly gets a slight bump over Kevin Conroy and Susan Eisenberg, but again, like, these are the voices that are iconic to the characters. So
yeah, it's like you said, to this day, it's like a lot of people just can't disassociate the voices with them. It's like, even when I'm reading comic books, like recently I reread the Metal trilogy for the Dark Knight's Metal stuff. And it's like, I'm still hearing their voices.
Yeah.
And by the way, now after reading that, I now want them to, like, do just a rock cover of a song where all three of them get to sing.
I mean, I'd be into it, you know. You tell me that I can get Batman singing Sweet Child of Mine? Like, come on. Who wouldn't want to listen to that? Yeah. We've already, looking at our other topics, we've already touched on the faithfulness to the comic storyline. Like, this is legitimately, like I said, up until the last fight, really. Like, it's a pretty direct adaptation, and to the point where there are certain, like, frames, you know, certain images, like, oh no, this is a frame from the comic. Like, this is, I wouldn't say shockingly accurate, but it's an adaptation to the point where it's like, damn, they didn't have to change that much to make this, like, pacing, like, flow well for a movie. Like, this is still a pretty one-to-one situation.
Yeah, and honestly, the only changes that they made aren't really for pacing. It's more just, we think that this might be a little bit go over the main audience's head, since this has never been mentioned, except in, like, the DC animated universe, where it was kind of like the final MacGuffin for that series.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know how John Q. Lehman, how upset they were about, oh, wait, where's the source wall, you know? I mean, I personally thought it would have been cool to have Superman push him into the source wall, but I do think it served the story well in that it gave Kara that last bit of agency in being the one to send Darkseid away. But we can get into that later with the final fight. So let's just go through a few bits and pieces during or throughout the story of the movie. How do you feel about Kara's arrival?
I feel like it's pretty good. Since I did watch Public Enemies and, you know, read the storyline and everything, having her come down and just be sort of a byproduct, since all Kryptonite is a chunk of Krypton and everything, it's like, I feel like not only is it plausible, but it's also, like, more probable than anything else. She literally left as it was exploding.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah. And the whole reason the meteor, the giant, you know, Brazil-sized chunk of Kryptonite was hurtling towards Earth in the first place was because it was surrounding her vessel. So, like, its guidance system is what was pulling it to Earth. Like, her coming to Earth is what essentially caused the whole, you know, at least plot or a plot in Superman, Batman, Public Enemies, which they don't necessarily touch on here. That's something they go on a little bit more in the comics. But yeah, no, I thought it was a nice touch that this, like the comic, picks up just directly after that. And this movie, the opening does give you a brief recap of the events of Public Enemies. So it's like, oh, okay, you don't have to have immediately watched Public Enemies to get this. You might be confused as to why it's talking about, oh, President Luthor was impeached or whatever, but...
Hey, that just gets you more interested in the world, because it's like, Luthor was president?
Like, I'm sorry? Jesse Eisenberg was in the Oval Office?
If the DCEU ever does do that, that's going to be peak. It's going to be my favorite cinematic universe.
Hey, man, I'd love to see I'm a big fan of Lex's president era. I thought that was really entertaining. But yeah, so Kara arrives. She, you know, steals Batman's boat as he's investigating.
Accidentally.
Kryptonite. She doesn't know how to drive it. After he's investigating her crash into the Gotham Reservoir, she leads him, I should say, on a merry chase throughout Gotham as she's discovering her powers. Accidentally sets fire to one of those famous Gotham Zeppelins. Gotta watch out for those Gotham Zeppelins, folks. Superman comes in, saves the day as per usual. She passes out after, you know, Batman pulls a little, like, kryptonite that he keeps on deck, you know, just in case Superman ever gets out of line. You know, Batman's gonna lay the smackdown on him.
See, I thought it was the kryptonite that was around her ship, because in the shot, it does have some of the pieces surrounding it, and Kara hasn't absorbed any yellow sunlight, so she should be immune to it at this point.
That's true. Well, no, I mean, I don't, even if she hadn't absorbed the sunlight yet, like, it's not necessarily like it saps the sunlight from them, it's just a specific wavelength of radiation that affects them. Like, even if Superman was, if Superman's energy cells were depleted, like, and he was at, you know, basically, you put Superman in a red solar prison for 2 weeks, and then you put kryptonite next to him, he's still going to react to the kryptonite.
Huh.
Yeah.
See, I don't remember what comic it is, because it was, like, a long time ago. But I remember, like, Superman was completely sapped of his sunlight, and he had to be human for a bit, so that way he
Was that you think of the, after Infinite Crisis?
Yeah, and he didn't react to kryptonite one time, and I thought, oh, so he has to have sunlight in order to react to kryptonite.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe one of us is right and one of us wrong. We just both need to reach. I feel like it depends on the writer, honestly. Because, I mean, how many times... Kryptonite's wonky, and how many times have we seen Superman get depowered by red solar radiation, and then someone comes at him with kryptonite? Like, in another DC animated movie, Superman Doomsday, when Lex has the Superman clone, he keeps him in a red solar room and just beats the shit out of him with kryptonite brass knuckles. So, you know, it's depends on the story. But, you know, we're talking about this
story. Another good movie.
Another good movie, guys. Should watch it. Just saying. So yeah, they take Kara back to the Batcave. Oh, she wakes up. She melts a computer. You get some fun little, you know, character moments here between Superman and Batman, saying like, "Oh, I'll pay for the computer." And Batman's like, on a reporter's salary, and he would know because he owns the Daily Planet. I don't know if people know that. Yeah. But Bruce Wayne owns the Daily Planet. So, and he also owns Superman's apartment building, at least, you know, in pre Flashpoint continuity.
Well, he's supposed to, like, do it now because, you know, they've combined the continuities. But I always found that funny. Like, Lex tried to buy the Daily Planet, then Bruce bought it, so that way Supes doesn't have a conflict of interest. I always wondered, though, why did Bruce buy the apartment building?
That I can't answer because it was earlier in Jeff Loeb's run on Superman. It wasn't in Jeff Loeb's run on Superman. I think it was a wedding present. To Clark and Lois, because they really wanted to move in this place, but, like, they couldn't get a spot or whatever, and Batman's like, okay, well, I bought the place, you can have a spot.
Bruce is always buying people's places to let them stay there.
Hey, man, if you're a friend with a billionaire, you gotta make it happen. But this whole, you know, transitioning from Kara's arrival to the main, or one of the main cruxes of the film, this interaction sort of sets the stage for the dynamic between Superman and Batman for most of the movie, where Batman's like, I don't know if I trust her because I'm Batman. And Superman's like, dude, she's my cousin. I feel it in my bones. Like, this is my family. What do you think about this dynamic?
I like both sides, because in this one, Clark is realizing he has a family member that's out there. He originally believed he was the last Kryptonian, and the next time he found out about a new Kryptonian, it was Zod and his cronies. So at this point, having a Kryptonian that's
his, not actively only trying to kill him,
yeah, and also his family is like a perfect way for you to, like, let Clark make some questionable decisions about immediately trusting this girl who fell from the sky. On the other hand, I do like Batman's skepticism as well. Because it's like, yeah, this seems awfully convenient. We just dealt with a giant kryptonite meteor, and then your cousin just so happened to be in said meteor.
Just drops from the sky. That's not, you know, that's not strange at all, is it, Clark?
Yeah, it's like, I understand both sides, and the fact that they allow both sides to have validity shows just how well their friendship and even how well their arguments are for both sides. It's like, even like, Bruce is like saying, like, hey, I understand what you're feeling and everything, but you are completely dropping your guard around her, and we still don't fully know if what she says is true.
Yeah, he's like, dude, you are one of the most important people, like, on the planet. You can't just immediately trust everybody. Like,
I would say the universe.
I would also say the universe, but then I was thinking about like some of the New Gods and the Green Lanterns. I was like, where's the Matt? Where does he rank on the scale? I mean, according to The Rock, he's the most powerful and unstoppable force in the universe. So there you go.
Yeah, so like I said, I enjoy both sides, and I enjoy the validity of both sides. And I also like to add credit to Batman's argument. She is suffering from convenient amnesia.
Very convenient. Very convenient amnesia. She's not faking, but it is very convenient and suspicious.
Yeah. So what about you?
I'm a big fan of it. You know, I always like when, you know, and I started off, you know, talking about this movie, making fun of them trying to fight each other in Batman v Superman. But I do like it when Batman and Superman have philosophical debates, but are still able to maintain their friendship. It leads to a lot of interesting conflict, and it leads to a lot of funny one-liners, just, you know, in general. And I think this movie is definitely a great example of how to get that dynamic right. This is a dynamic that I would like to see, you know, in a live action setting at some point. But if I can't, then at the very least, I can just keep rewatching this movie and rereading the comics. But you know, we're spending so much time talking about the Batman and Superman dynamic, but there's another hero to add to this dynamic, and that's Wonder Woman.
A wonder, if you will.
A wonder. I will, Drew. Wonder Woman gets involved. You know, she wants to take Kara under her wing in Paradise Island and train her, much to Superman's chagrin. You know, he's like, no, she's my family, she'll stay with me. And, you know, both Batman and Wonder Woman are rightly like, what do you know about training somebody with superpowers? Or just really training anybody in general. And he's like, you know what? You got me there. So they take Kara to Paradise Island. It leads to a little heat, you know, between Superman and Wonder Woman, and also Batman. He doesn't like that they planted this behind his back. He gets a little heated, you know, when Artemis and Kara are having a little training session, and then Artemis pulls a blade on her, and Superman just goes into protective big cousin mode, forgets that the blade would just shatter against her skin, and he almost chokes the shit out of Artemis. Well, I mean, he does choke her, but he almost, you know, looks like he's about to snap her neck, and it's like, bro, chill. Cool it. But what do you think about this this dynamic, and Wonder Woman bring in sort of a third perspective to the debate on what to do with Kara?
When I first watched this, I was like, that doesn't feel very Superman-ish, but it's like, as I've watched through the movie, it's like, I can understand it. I started to understand it even when I was younger. It's like, yeah, Supes doesn't really appreciate like his friends going behind his back to do this. And I also have to like agree. It's like, Bats, I understand that you're skeptical that Superman might say no and everything, but at the same time, to plan to like try and kidnap her, that's a little much.
It's a bit much. It's very on brand for Batman, but it's a bit much.
Yeah. Wonder Woman being on board with it is the only problem I have with it, because even though, like, yes, it's for the greater good, Wonder Woman's always that person who's the reasonable one of the Trinity. It's like, she understands, like, there has to be a point of, we can't just do anything, we want in these positions and everything. We've got to think what's the best, way forward and everything. So her to just, like, try and kidnap Kara does feel a bit out of character, but I understand it at the same time. And she does respect Batman's side when he puts down his foot and says, yeah, this has to happen. So I can understand her doing it as well.
Well, see, with that, at least in talking about their dynamic, and I mean, we're talking about the context of the film and also just in general, I would argue that it's typically Superman who's the most reasonable of the three in terms of like, oh, we can't just do this. Now, Diana definitely acts frequently as the mediator between Superman and Batman, I would say, as sort of the focal point in the center of, you know, that group dynamic. But I feel like in general, it's more Superman who tends to be like, no, like we can't overstep, we can't do all this, because I mean, Diana's whole mission was that she came to change the world. You know, that was her mandate. I'm changing man's world. Like, I'm going to make a difference. It's going to happen. And it, as a part of that and a part of her warrior culture, she has always had this thing in common with Batman where, you know, I mean, not to the extent of all the various contingencies, but failing to prepare is preparing to fail, you know? Like, she is a warrior. She's a strategist. She does have a keen military mind. So I get what you're saying, where, like, it may at first seem out of character that she would just kidnap Kara, but I never didn't buy it because it was so planned and so thought out, and it was very much a thing of like Clark is not taking this seriously, or Cal, because Diane always calls him Cal and Bruce always calls him Clark. Cal is not taking this seriously. Like, he needs to recognize that this could be a problem and that Paradise Island is the best place for her. And on top of that, you know, she is, at least in the comic, I can't remember how much they go into it in this, but she is also working with Lila the Harbinger in this, voiced by Rachel Quaintance, who also voices Artemis. But she is acting with Harbinger, who has seen visions of how important Kara is going to be, you know?
Yeah. And I kind of forget, besides that side story with them being potential new, like, humans and everything,
mm-hmm.
this is Lila's first reappearance back in the comics, right?
Post Crisis on Infinite Earths?
Yes.
It's the first one that I can immediately think of.
Yeah.
It's at least her first, like, where it's like, oh shit, like, it's Harbinger. Like, she's doing things. Like, she might have appeared, you know, in the background or something, or in a panel during some, you know, other type of crisis, 0 hour, like, oh, it's Harbinger, in the same way that sometimes Pariah just pops up, like, oh, this means it's a big deal. But, like, I feel like this is the first time since Crisis on Infinite Earth that she was, like, a character that had a real impact on the story. But speaking of other characters who have big impacts on the story, we talked about him earlier with a voice. We gotta talk about Darkseid, and we gotta talk about all his little baddies on Apocalypse, because while all this is happening with Kara, you know, the Supergirl Land Earth, Darkseid's out there scheming. He's got his sources, he's got his ways, you know, he's looking for some new blood for his female Furies. He gets word of this Kryptonian girl who's crashed Earth. He's like, oh, well, that sounds like the perfect leader for my Honor Guard. Female Furies, get down there. We're going to indoctrinate this Kryptonian, and I'm going to have a new number one killer. So he sends the army of Doomsdays that he's genetically bred. Where does that come from? Well, if you haven't been reading the comics, you don't know. It's a thing from earlier in a Jeff Loeb run where Lex traded Doomsday to Darkseid for some Apocalypse and technology. It's, you know, whatever.
It's point where his being, warsuit comes from.
It's also where the warsuit comes from. He genetically engineered an army of Doomsdays. That's why they're so shitty. You get a cool fight scene with a bunch of army of Doomsdays attacking, you know, Themyscira. You got Batman with a battle axe. You got Wonder Woman leading an army. You got Superman just going apeshit. And then once they're like, oh, these things aren't alive, he just fucking vaporizes these things. And it's dope as hell. It's really cool. It's like, damn. Superman can be real scary when he wants to be.
Yes, he can. I also love the use of his other powers. Like, we get his frost breath to freeze them when he's trying to be pinpoint. And then when he realizes, like, okay, something's not right. Bats isn't here. And also, like, these Doomsdays are... We're not going to be able to defeat all these Doomsdays without me going all out. And then the laser beam and the precision. This movie really does give props to Superman and how powerful he can be.
It's great stuff.
It's
great stuff. But going off that and to who sent these Doomsdays, Drew, how do you feel about Darkseid and the forces of Apocalypse in this movie?
Honestly, this is one of the moments where I was the most scared of ever going to Apocalypse. It's like,
you don't like Grant,
you never want to go there. It's like, in the DC animated universe, you can tell that they like try to do as much as they can, but they still like keep it a little soft because, you know, it's for the kids as well. In this one, however, it's like, oh no, we got literal suicide bombers in this one.
Just alien kamikazes.
But also Granny with Kara in that opening where it's like they do too good a job of giving Granny goodness the Granny voice, where it's like, no, why are you speaking in the kind old lady voice while I'm being shackled and everything? And then Darkseid appearing from the shadows and that speech that made me so scared of ever being in a room with this guy. Because even if he wants you to succeed, it feels like you're going to go through hell.
Oh, yeah. It's like, you're not going to get out of this interaction unscathed. Like, he's gonna have an effect on you.
And just the dopeness of it, too. It's like, you might feel scared now, but soon you'll watch the fear in men's eyes. Armies will be brought to their knees. Entire nations will crumble at your mere presence. From now on, you will be one of by my side. Forever mine, forever dark side. And it's just so good.
It's dope as shit. It's dope as shit. Darkseid in general, in this movie, dope as shit. The Fumo Furies are never characters that have a lot of depth to them. They're basically just there to look visually interesting and kick ass, and they definitely do that in this movie. Granny Goodness is appropriately creepy and sycophantic. I think this whole section of the film, just any scene with Apocalypse and any of its denizens, I think is some top tier stuff.
Yeah.
But speaking of, you know, residents of Apocalypse, after the Fumo Furies successfully managed to steal Kara away and murder Harbinger in the process, R.I.P. Lila, after they managed to sneak her away during the big battle, that's when the Trinity's like, hey, we gotta get on up to Apocalypse. We gotta take Kara back. And who can help with that, Drew? Who do we know who's from Apocalypse who, you know, might know their way around the dark fourth world?
Well, I think of no one better than Big Barda.
You're goddamn right. You get Big Barda in the picture. They just show up to her house. She's fresh out of the shower. She was like, oh, and you're coming right over. I didn't think you meant right over. And boy, God, I love Big Barda. I love the way they translate her in this movie, where she's still much larger than everybody, just looking down on Superman. You know, it's great. Big Barda is great. Everyone should be a Big Barda stan, I'd go so far as to say.
Yeah, Big Barda is awesome. And just her, like, when she's talking about her new quaint little life, and it's like, it's all mine, and you can see, like, this is what she's always wanted.
This is all she wanted.
Yeah, so I really like that. The characterization you get from her being a denizen of Apocalypse to just the mundanity of life being something that she covets more than anything, it's like, it speaks volumes. She's such a great character.
It speaks volumes, and to that point of her being such a great character, like, she gets a surprising amount of character for coming in so late in the movie, because, like you say, she seems so happy in just this little normal quaint slice of life, and then she immediately is willing to, you know, drop it all to go help her friends, because they're trying to go without her. They're just like, we just need a boom tube. They're like, she's like, no, I'm coming with you. Like, you're not just gonna go to Apocalypse without me and risk getting killed. Like, I fucking got this. And to the point where Superman tries to stop her, she's like, no, I'm coming. And, you know, we see them get to Apocalypse, we see her react to being back there, and her moment with Wonder Woman saying, you're always such an inspiration to me. Like, you see how shitty Apocalypse is, and the fact that Bardo once occupied the spot that Darkseid is trying to place Kara in. Like, it's like, wow, no, you see the struggle that you at least are able to infer and imagine the struggle that she went through to get out of this place and to grab hold of that small, quaint little life that she loves so much. And it's, a lot of it is unspoken, but it really, really works.
It really does, like, allow just that small bit of characterization. Like, you don't need a character to be on screen for all their storyline, everything. You're allowed to, like, have some stuff off screen, let the audience imagine, and let them see what a character is like. And I also really do love that moment with Wonder Woman. Makes me really wish we get more Wonder Woman centered stuff to allow us to see Wonder Woman's character and just who else she inspires throughout her career.
It's definitely a good character beat for Diana too, because she's like, not necessarily embarrassed by it, but she is like, no, like, Barda, you don't have to do this. Like, it's not a big deal. And Barda's like, no, like, it is. Like, when you give hope to someone, like, it means something. And it's like, damn, that's a good moment between these two. And in general, I really enjoy the Barda Wonder Woman dynamic. They had a good, not necessarily rivalry, but a good back and forth during Grant Morrison's JLA run. Spar a lot together. Because also, like, Barda, for people who aren't familiar, is like a Superman Wonder Woman level powerhouse. Like, she is incredibly strong. She's one of the few people that, you know, they could actually spar with and get a decent workout. And Barda's warrior training on Apocalypse is, you know, arguably rivals that of Diana's on Themyscira. So Barda is a good sort of like one-to-one, almost like an alien Wonder Woman, just with a much different background. And that leads to some interesting dynamics that we get a hint at here.
And Granny even tries to use in the movie.
She tries. Doesn't work, but, you know, RIP
Granny. And she disappointed Darkseid.
You don't want to disappoint Darkseid. I tell you what, list of things you don't want to do, disappointing Darkseid, damn near the top. But Darkseid was pretty damn disappointed when the Trinity plus Barda come and get back Kara, because you got great fight scene with Barda and Wonder Woman taking on the female Furies. Just absolutely dope. The choreography is fantastic. Wonder Woman throwing in a fucking elbow drop on, is it Mad Harriet? Is that who took it, or is it Guillotina? Yep. I can't remember. Yeah. Just fucking dope. You got Superman just wrecking shop on those previously mentioned suicide bombers, just going just on a beeline straight for Darkseid's throne room. He's like, no, I'm going to get Kara back. You got Batman. You're like, Batman, what are you doing running around here? He just run around. You think he's fighting a big dog? You're like, Bruce, why are you fighting a big dog? What are you doing with, you know, you just got eaten. No, no. Oh, he comes out the mouth of the dog with a bunch of smoke. But
and he destroyed Orion's astro harness.
He did. Which that was, I was, and this is a thing in the comics too. I'm like, what does Mr. Miracle have Orion's astro harness?
I would have one too. That thing is a dope ride.
Yeah, but then you also see, like, he's got the aero discs, like, in the closet or whatever. So it's like, oh. I don't know. Yeah. They always frame the astro harness as like, oh, this is Orion's specific thing, you know? Like, they make it seem like such a unique bond to him. It's like, oh, is this just like a bicycle? Like, can anybody have an astro harness? I'd like an astro harness. Like you said, you'd ride it all the time. I definitely ride mine all the time. But I digress. We're getting sidetracked. So, you know, Superman makes his way to Darkseid's throne room, and he's like, Kara, come with me. She's just there looking like a goth e-girl because of the dark sideification of it all. And guess what? Under Darkseid's orders, he's just beating the shit out of Superman. It's a pretty interesting fight. You know, he's hesitant to throw down too hard because, you know, he still loves her. He still wants to save her. But, you know, at the end, he has to pull out some kryptonite and fucking clock her one. But that's not the big resolution.
Well, that's only in the comics.
Yeah. Oh, that they don't do that in this movie? I can never remember. Yeah, I always have like the weird Mandela effect where I imagined the frame like animated in the comic.
Same.
It's weird. But a bit that is in the comic that is also in the movie is Batman wasn't just messing around with those dogs. he wasn't just having a puppy playdate. He was activating all of Darkseid's hell spores that create the fire pits. And he bluffs Darkseid into releasing Kara by saying, hey, I'll blow up the planet, which, I don't know. Was Batman serious? I don't think he was.
Yeah, it's like Batman's whole thing is like he does not kill.
He's not going to kill. He's not going to blow up a planet. Like, there's innocent people on Apocalypse, shocking as that may be. Even if there weren't innocent people, like, he also doesn't kill. But all this to say, Darkseid's like, yeah, sure, I don't need Kara Zor-El. You can take her and go, whatever. And that leads us into the final act of the movie where shit just really pops off. Kara and Superman, she's finally free for brainwashing. He's taking her to meet Ma and Pa Kent. You finally, so they can be a little family. They knock on the door. Who is it? Oh, it's Darkseid. Guess who's coming to dinner? And he just starts beating the shit out of both of them. And boy,
okay,
is it
before
cool.
Before we get into the fight, my only regret of this entire comic, we don't see Darkseid sitting on a comfy couch.
Drew, you are fucking reading my mind, because every time I watch this and every time I read it, Darkseid's much larger than the door. How did he get in? Did he boom in? Did he boom tube into the living room? How does he know the address of Clark's parents? Like, is he just sitting there on the couch, like you said? Is he, like, doing anything? Maybe he's, like, I don't know, taking a shit and not flushing in the bathroom because he's evil? Like, what was he doing anything just petty to bother Clark? Or was it just, like, he's just sitting there chilling, waiting, like, by the door? Like, can you imagine Darkseid just peeking through the blinds? Just like, oh, there they are. I'm going to fucking get this Kryptonian piece of shit. I'm going to get him.
It's like, why are you stopping? I just want to punch you through this wall.
It's like, I just want to fucking ruin your day. Because Darkseid, if I recall correctly from the DC Universe Encyclopedia, I want to say that Darkseid is 8'6". So at the very least, if his head's not touching, if he's not like hunched over, I imagine his head is touching the ceiling or damn close. So just the dynamic of the Dreadlord of Apocalypse, literally the ultimate evil in the DC universe, just sitting in Ma and Pa Kent's house, probably seeing baby pictures of Clark just on the wall. Like,
and worst of all, you know that with Ma and Pa Kent, like Ma Kent had an apple pie ready.
Oh my
he probably
God.
Ate the
oh
pie.
Oh my goodness. You know, he is evil enough to do it. He's evil enough to do it. Or at the very least, like, maybe there was some her special lemonade or something. Maybe he spit in it. Like, I don't know. Well, see, because here is the question. You know, we're running long in this bit, but it is a very interesting conversation to me, legitimately. Here's the question about Darkseid. He is the ultimate evil, but the question becomes, how petty is he? Because this is all stuff that someone like the Joker, he would do this. Even Lex would probably do this. Like, Lex would 100% spit in the lemonade or something. But is Darkseid so small that he would just try and mess with things? Or would it not even occur to him? He's just like sitting there waiting, like, I'm going to fuck this guy up. Like, he's just sitting there stewing, thinking about his vengeance.
Oof.
It's an interesting question that the audience... Write in with what you think Darkseid would do. You know, you can mention, you can put it in the Discord, you can put it in the comments for this episode. You can tweet at us. Hashtag, what would Darkseid do? We'll see if this gets any interaction. We got to get more interaction with the fans. So, hashtag, what would Darkseid do? What do you think Darkseid did in the Kent household? And I look forward to seeing what people think. But we got to talk about this final fight.
Yes, we do.
Drew, what's your favorite part of this final fight? Let's just start with that.
I've mentioned my favorite part already. It's just Kara getting those moments where she gets to zoom around and go past Darkseid's Omega Beads, and then just, like, do that dirty little flip move and everything and turn them against him. Like, the only character to this day to actually be able to do that just on their own. It's like freaking Batman needed, like, a super-powered crystal and the Hellbat armor to even attempt. So it's like, that's one of my favorite points. The other point is when Darkseid has finally defeated Kara, because, like, as much as I love Supergirl and everything, it's like, you're still new, you're still green, and this is the leader of Apocalypse, this is, like, the person...
This is the god of evil, like...
Yeah.
You got a second, Kara.
Yeah, it's like, just the fact that you were able to keep up as long as you did, I'm giving you all the props, Kara.
Yeah, the fact that she wasn't dead, like, she gets all the props in the world.
Yeah, but then it's like, after she loses, Darkseid is approaching, he feels back in control again, and he gives that little speech. It's like, he's like, you're powerful, you have such promise, and all of it's going to be wasted here on Earth. Your life could have been so much more. And then, just one sentence that goes against everything Darkseid stands for, it'll be my life. That moment.
Oof.
Bam!
Don't say that to Darkseid. Darkseid! Drew, as you well know, famously anti-life.
Famously anti-life. He worships a freaking equation of it, too.
So. He's all about that anti-life equation. That's his whole thing. But no, I mean, those are some definite top-tier moments. I am going to raise... those are up there for me. I'm going to raise three other top-tier moments of this whole fight that I just love.
Go ahead.
One, right after... he beats Kara and Superman finally gets back after Darkseid punched him into space or wherever. And I like this largely because it's become such a meme on Twitter, but Superman sees Kara's unconscious body and tries to walk past, and Darkseid just grabs his cape. Like, where do you think you're going, bro? Like, because that's turned into a meme on Twitter. Everyone, you've 100% seen this on Twitter. Anytime someone says something, you know, sus or like, hold up, like, just like, I'm sorry. Like, come again. Where you think you're just going to go off with that? So that's a good one for me. I also love immediately after that when Superman just starts going all out on Darkseid and he's heat visioning him and punching him at super speed in the face, like in a cyclone. It's like, man, like Clark is not holding back. Like he is trying to beat Darkseid down and
doing a good job.
Yeah, a fantastic job. It's a really, really cool job. And then I guess this other third thing isn't really a moment so much as just a character thing about Darkseid. I just like the way he flies, just essentially just standing up. You know, he's just like,
I've always liked that around. Too.
He's just very casual about it, and I really enjoy that about him. He's just like, yeah, I don't need to bend over. Like, why? I'm Darkseid. Like, fear me. See my imposing stature. And he just stomps into the ground and like implodes it in almost like a friggin' mushroom cloud. It's like, Jesus, Darkseid, so cool. But
yeah, it's like. It's amazing to me, like, because in the comics, I always wondered if he's flying, he's teleporting, and then when I found out he flies that way,
flies that way, because he can. Just cool. He's like, yeah, whatever. I want to look cool while I do it, and boy, does he. But yeah, so what happens is Darkseid thinks he kills Kara, then he's like, yeah, Superman, I killed Kara, and then Superman beats the fuck out of him, but then Darkseid starts beating the fuck back out of him. He's like, bitch, I'm Darkseid. And then, hey, Kara gets the one over on him, takes his boom tube, his mother box, the boom tube generator, and reprograms the coordinates and boop, opens a portal. And Superman says the hardest fuck line of like, don't come back here or you won't be going home. So it's like, damn, Superman's going to kill Darkseid who comes back. And then boom, they ship Darkseid off to space because Kara's smart and she reprogrammed it. And then, you know, that's about the end of the movie. They have a nice little, essentially, coming out party as Supergirl, or for Supergirl as Supergirl on Paradise Island. You know, and then we get a nice little ending segment. The music's lovely. The animation's lovely. The character beats are lovely. Of Clark and Kara just flying off to Metropolis together as Superman and Supergirl, they circle the Daily Planet. It's just good stuff. It's a good ending.
It's really cool. I also, and like you said, those character beats are really nice where Clark's flying normally, but Kara, who's finally fully herself, is just enjoying her flight. She's spinning around
Time. She's making Clark have more fun, you know? Helping him, realize, it's like, hey, you know, like, this is a pretty amazing life, and you know, more so than a lot of other superheroes, I would say that Clark is generally pretty good about being appreciative for the life he leads. But, you know, every now and then, you need someone to shake you out of your, not necessarily a rut, but to make you realize, hey, shit's pretty cool. Shit's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Just like this movie. So, Drew, we got to start wrapping up, because we got things to do. But,
yeah.
What are your final...
Can I talk about one other character moment?
Oh, go ahead, by all means. By all means.
So we skipped over the kidnapping of Kara, and right before that has favorite moments that really embodies Kara's journey through this movie. When she sees the statue of Superman in Metropolis, and she's like,
that is a good point.
This is how they see you, larger than life. And for the first time, she realizes what Clark means to the planet. And she says, I don't know if I even want to be a champion. It's like, I was just a girl back on Krypton and everything. It's like all that.
Yeah. Well, because she's been, it's a good character moment because she's also been essentially just asleep. So for all she knows, like she didn't register that it had been what, like 30 years. It could have just been a week.
Yeah. So it's like all of that just hitting her at once. It's just a really good moment. This movie really does have just like those small moments where it's like in context, they could be just nice moments of characterization, but put together in this movie, it's like you get Kara's full journey in these small moments. It's really cool.
100%. Now, Drew, would you consider that to be one of your final pros or your final cons? Or final thoughts in general?
I would say it's one of my final pros. Like, for my final thoughts, I'm just gonna get right to it. There are so many good moments of writing in this entire story that it just makes me fall in love with all the characters, even the side characters. I've never fully weeped more for Harbinger, even in Crisis on Infinite Earths when she lost the monitor, than I did here, where it's like that self-sacrifice, seeing the possibility that it's Kara's death and then choosing to be the replacement. That is an amazing moment that really does push her as a hero and really makes you feel for her, even though she only appears really for just a couple of scenes in the movie. So, yeah, pros, love the dynamic between the Trinity, all of them. Darkseid, like I said, one of my favorite characters, not only gets his due, he steals a lot of the scenes in this movie. And Big Barda, love her stuff as well. So, yeah. Con, we don't see Darkseid on a comfy couch.
That's a con for the DC Universe as a whole, I would say. I've only ever seen him on sitting in a comfy chair like one time, and I can't tell if it's from an actual comic book panel or not. Actually, you know what? No, now I'm thinking about it. In Justice League International, he does, in like the 80s run, there is a bit where he's like hanging out on a little chair for a little while. Or is that in DC Legends? Something from the 80s.
I think it's DC International, but he also does it when he visits Mr. Miracle to show the special tape of Superman and Barda.
Oh, yeah. Well, we don't need to get into that. We don't need to get into the sleaze of it all.
Yeah. And he did it one other time. It's just Darkseid seems to like comfy couches. So.
Oh, I thought your audio cut out. I was like, why did it get quiet?
Oh,
well, there you go. Taylor, there's something for you to edit. There you go. Or leave it in. I don't really care. People know what we're about.
People know what we're about. What about your pros and cons and final thoughts, Tristan?
Pros and cons. I love how faithful an adaptation of one of my favorite Superman-Batman stories this is. The character dynamics, like you say, are all great. A lot of the small, intimate moments, even just with characters by themselves, or a lot of the unspoken things, like as we talked about with Barda. All great stuff. The visuals, I think, I really like the animation style, which pulls heavily from the work of Michael Turner, RIP, one of my favorite artists when I was growing up, and I think his art translates real well for some very interesting looks and some very interesting action set pieces in this story, which is another pro. I think the action in this is, as we said, top tier, especially that final fight. Cons, this is a con I generally have with a lot of the DC animated movies. It's just, they're a lot shorter than I want them to be, but as I said, this is a pretty one-to-one, you know, adaptation, so I don't necessarily know what more they could have added. So it's a very small nitpicky con, you know, take it with a grain of salt. I'm just trying to be fair and balanced. But overall, final thoughts is, yeah, this is a really enjoyable movie, and if, you know, you're ever just looking for something to watch on a Sunday afternoon just while you're trying to kill the time, Superman, Batman, Apocalypse, man. It's the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get into our final little rigmarole here. Drew, what are you working on, and where can people find you?
Creatively, I am just working on my book right now. I have not returned to YouTube. But other than that, you can still find my social media on DrewGarrison_. And look out, because I'm going to be posting some stuff for my book soon enough.
Well, Shante, well, everybody, stay tuned. Stay tuned. It's going to be, I know a bit about Drew's book, and it's going to be some interesting stuff. This is going to be some interesting stuff. As for me, I'm still cranking out pieces over at Screen Rant. I'm writing about Power Rangers a lot lately for some reason, so why don't you go see what's going on with the Power Rangers? How did Zordon lose his body? Well, I tell you. As for the socials, you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at BackIssueBins. So, as with every episode, we're going to have a link to our Discord server within the description of this episode. Everyone should hop on over there, join us. We're always down to talk about nerdy things. We definitely need someone to share with us what they think Darkseid was doing in the Kent's household. You know, if you want to find us anywhere, you can reach out to any of our socials that we've mentioned. You can tweet at us, hashtag, what did Darkseid do? You know, we would really like to hear the audience's thoughts on this very important topic. Arguably, Drew, the most important thing we've ever discussed on this show.
Arguably.
But when you're looking for the link to our Discord, make sure to leave a rating, you know, preferably something positive. If you want to put something negative, I'm just not going to acknowledge it, quite frankly, because I don't need that negativity in my life, you know, just trying to keep it cash, keep it 100, keep it chill. But, you know, if you don't love leaving positive ratings on things, I don't know what to tell you, but If you do love video games and you're looking for another podcast to listen to, you may want to check out our gaming podcast that we talk about all the time called Power Up and Game. On that podcast, we go over some of the trending news stories around the gaming industry, and on occasion, we also have deep dive discussions about specific games, which are essentially, you know, reviews, but we don't like to call them that. Similar to how we have spoiler talks and retrospectives that are also essentially reviews, but we just don't like to call them that. Finally, check out the nerdstash.com. We got a host of talented writers over there talking about all sorts of things. Video games, movies, comics, tech, just all that jazz. Maybe they're going to write an article about what Darkseid did. I hope they do. I'd definitely read that. But in the meantime, Drew, thanks for joining me. Thanks for anyone who's listening in. Thanks in advance for anyone who's going to share their Darkseid opinions. And in our next episode, which I'm particularly excited about, we will be discussing my long vaunted top 52 favorite movies. That's right. How is this gonna go? I'm not entirely sure. Are we gonna do what we said behind the scenes and maybe you and Taylor try and guess what's on it? Am I just gonna go tier by tier and tell you? I don't know. We gotta figure it out, but it'll either be a mess or it'll be a good time. Either way, there's going to be some surprising picks on there that you guys might not expect. Am I a big fan of La La Land? I guess you'll have to wait till next week to find out. See you then.